News Radio 690 KTSM presents more of the El Paso History Show, featuring your host, documentary filmmaker Jackson Polk, and historian Melissa Sargent. We're live online at ktsmradio.com. Brought to you by ephistory.com, the website for archive podcasts of this radio show and DVDs about El Paso history and heritage. ephistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, making the old Griggs recipes in a new location at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. Call 915-581-7099. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Hey, guys, we're back. We think we're here. We're having a great time. We're doing radio. We're talking about military history of El Pasoans in various wars. We'll get to that in just a second. But, Mr. Bill, shall we try the history moment? It was indeed an event recorded and created by Melissa Sargent for the El Paso History Alliance. And our history moment today is about a try at rainmaking in 1892.
The rainmaker comes to El Paso in 1892. El Paso is suffering from a severe drought, and with no rain in sight, Mayor Richard Cables and City Alderman recruit U.S. Brigadier General R.G. Dryenforth, a concussionist. The general's theory was rain could be created by firing cannons and launching balloons loaded with explosives into the sky. Though explosions did rock El Paso, the general's team failed to create rain and instead caused several small fires. The general's final report to the mayor and the city alderman stated, though no rain was created, a heavy dew did fall. Years later, the general's failure at making rain branded him with the nickname of Dry Henceforth. This was an El Paso History Moment. I'm Melissa Sargent for the El Paso County Historical Commission.
This El Paso History Moment is brought to you by Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services. Go online to sargentinventoryservices.com.
And there you are, Rick Kern.
Hey, the El Paso History Alliance is on Facebook with more than 45,000 followers. Check it out or call Bernie Sargent for info at 915-581-7920. And also a mention of a great partner in El Paso history work, Barbara Given Bainey, who is operator of a great Facebook page called Remember an El Paso Win. Go there for archive pictures galore. She does a great job.
And also they have a bunch of administrators. We talk about one of them each week who works with Barbara. And this week we talk about Ken Weese, W-E-E-S-E. They have a lot of people there. That's a fabulous little site there. Brian Kanoff, do you know about this? You know about this Remember an El Paso Win over there on Facebook?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's got bazillions of pictures. It's fabulous stuff. And I know our call screener, Cindy, you look at that once in a while, remembering El Paso Win. Yeah. Even Mr. Bill Tolan there, you occasionally sees this.
Yeah.
Now, the guy from Chicago, Luna, he doesn't see this. But Bill Luna, if you were interested in El Paso history, there's a page here on Facebook with 45,000 followers. And the lady, basically the lady that runs it, has a whole bunch of help. They have hundreds and almost thousands and thousands of old El Paso archive pictures.
Wow.
And they're coming out of the woodwork all the time. Somebody finds a shoebox, and you say, we never heard about this. Oh, what is all this brand-new shoebox stuff?
Right.
And it happens all the time. Does that happen in Chicago to you?
All the time.
are you finding archives here and there?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, there's some people. When I had my museum, I had people. This one guy came in with a, I don't know if you know what a metate is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Well, anyway, this was 200 years old.
Wow.
From Colima. And he said it was in his garage. It was like a doorstop. And he said, do you want it? I said, I'll go pick it up if you want me to.
Did he have the big stone with it? The second,
right. It's got the
second piece.
They call it a mano.
Right.
And, you know, 200 years old from Colima. You know, so if I have my gym more time, there'll probably be more people that would bring things to me. But I bought most of the stuff myself. I brought it from Mexico. Myself, I transported across the border and I put a museum up that was a beautiful museum. I had it for 6 years, but I didn't get any support, so I had to close down.
You did this by yourself?
Yes, I had a bookstore by myself, too. That's why I have no money.
But if you had money, or if someone with money came to help you, you would turn on a Mexican-American museum in Chicago?
I would put a museum, first of all. I've been studying the history of Mexico for 30 years, and I don't know anything. Nobody knows the history of Mexico. Mexico has an ancient civilization, much older than this country, I hate to say. You know, But we don't talk about Mexican history. We didn't talk about Mexico next door. I think because it's right next door, we don't really think about it, you know. And so, you know, I would put a museum. You know, there's 31 states in Mexico. I would put a museum with a stall for every state. There's 62 dialects in Mexico. You know, every state is different in Mexico. They have different food. They have different music. They have different costumes. America's pretty generic. There's some influence here and there, but you can eat a hot dog in Chicago and one in San Francisco. This country is pretty generic, not Mexico. Every state is like a country. When asking where they're from, I'm from Zacatecas, I'm from Guerrero. Every state is like a country, and we don't know that in this country.
And if somebody says they're from Mexico, what do they mean?
Well, they just say they're from Mexico because they really don't know much about their state.
Well, no, what I'm saying is normally that refers to Mexico City.
Well, it's like people from the country. You know, they live out in the country somewhere in Aurora, but they all say they're from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's the same thing.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and Mexico City has 22 million people. I mean, I was there, you know, years ago, and they have a subway that moves 3 million people a day. You know, Chicago can't move the Red Line. You know, so, you know, we have a very disjointed picture of Mexico. And usually people's experience are on the border, you know, not in the interior of Mexico. You know, Mexico has a lot to offer, and we never talk really about Mexico, and it's right next door.
We got a lot of explaining to do, maybe, you know. I
got
to tell you.
A lot of explaining to do.
In about 2 weeks, we're going to have a guy in here, or actually by phone. He's an author who is going to give us the rundown on the book known as Abraham Lincoln and Mexico.
Yeah.
And that is an interesting interaction in the 1860s.
Well, you know, Abraham Lincoln was very good friends with Benito Juarez.
That's the book.
And I know Abraham Lincoln in the Mexican-American War, or it should be called the American-Mexican War, not the Mexican-American War, because America was winning that war. Senator Lincoln lost his reelection because he said there's an unjust war, it's a war about slavery. He was against the war, as was Frederick Douglass, as was Thoreau and all the scholars, Emerson. They were all against this war because it was an unjust war. And President Polk really was the one that instigated that war.
I heard about him.
You know, he's the one that instigated that war. They wanted the land of Mexico. You know, I won't go into it because I teach this, but, you know, there's things that we don't know about Mexico, and it's right next door, and I think we've taken it for granted. But I think this new administration has put Mexico on the international map. Intentional. I call it unintentional consequences because I get interviewed by the radio every couple of weeks, and they like to hear
what's going on. Well, let me tell you about a piece of history here that kind of interests me that I don't think a lot of people know, and maybe you haven't heard this either. But we have an Indian tribe here in El Paso named the Tigua Indians, Isleta del Sur Pueblo, Isleta of the South.
Right.
They took off from the north, Isleta with an I,
right,
up north, Isleta with a Y here. Okay, when come time for the recognition by Abraham Lincoln of the tribes of New Mexico, he recognized all the tribes in New Mexico territory,
right,
but he didn't touch this one because they weren't in New Mexico. They were in a Confederate state.
Right.
This is why we don't have a legal casino, I think.
Okay.
Because everybody in New Mexico became sovereign.
Okay.
The guys in Texas were left to fend for themselves,
right,
and they had a hard time of it here. The Tiguas did.
Mm-hmm.
They wasn't simple here. Brian, you know some of their history, and they're still not in great shape. But there's the difference, and the reason is because Lincoln did not recognize this tribe.
Right.
That this tribe does not have the things that the other tribes have.
And I think Benito Juarez, one of the greatest presidents of Mexico, gave the idea of the Emancipation Proclamation to Abraham Lincoln because Mexico had already outlawed slavery. You know, Mexico had a black president way before this country. The second president of Mexico was half black, Vicente Guerrero. He outlawed slavery in 1829. It was punishable by death to own slaves in Mexico.
The history is amazing. And when you hear it and when you see it, and see, I grew up here as a kid, and I've always embraced the Mexican culture because it was all around me.
Right.
I'm not of it.
Right.
But it is of me now because I can talk enchiladas with anybody. And also, I know when I'm being sworn at. So, you know.
That's dangerous.
So, by the way, anybody here going to Pepe's this afternoon? You guys have to go back to your convention? No.
Yeah, we have to go back.
Rick?
Probably not.
No Pepe's there? Okay, people want to know how many. I'm going to Pepe's. It'd be me and Roy out there, unless, Bill, you can't make it to Pepe's. Cindy, can you make it to Pepe's? Okay, no. We'll just have to do Pepe's, me and Roy. So it goes. But back to the story here.
Yeah.
What do you want people to know that they don't know?
Well, I wanted to focus, and I told Brian, let's focus on the people from El Paso, because I could talk for hours on the military history of Mexican-Americans. But let's get back to people from El Paso. And I want to focus on Marcelino Serna. Everybody knows Sergeant York, Alvin York, right? Good story. Nobody knows Marcelino Serna, okay? And he's on the same level as Sergeant York. He was born in Chihuahua and became an American citizen in 1924. He lived all his life in El Paso. He retired as a civil servant at Fort Bliss in 1960. What he did during World War I, he earned a Distinguished Service Cross, which is next to the Medal of Honor. He captured 24 German soldiers. He also killed 30 single-handed, and he wiped out 3 machine gun nests that had pinned down his company. For this action, he received the Distinguished Service Cross, the French Croix de Guerre for bravery, the American Victory Medal with 3 campaign clusters, the French Military Medal, France's highest decoration for enlisted man. He also received the Italian Cross of Merit, 2 Purple Hearts. He was a member of the Company B, 335th Infantry, 89th Division, called the Midwest Division because it included people from Kansas, Colorado, Utah, South Dakota, New Mexico, Arizona. He was nicknamed the Chief, and he was in 5 French campaigns. He also received Britain's Medal for Bravery. Nobody has what he has, and he didn't receive the Medal of Honor because he didn't know English. And that was, I saw in another report.
That's pretty much the bottom line. He just couldn't speak English.
He couldn't speak English.
So there were units of Mexican Americans.
Yeah, in World War One. Yeah, basically out of Texas, a lot of them out of Texas.
Wow. And so that's World War One.
World War One. Yeah.
Amazing history.
Next one in World War Two, Second Lieutenant Oscar Francis Perdomo out of El Paso. He was the 464th Fighter Squadron out of 507th Fighter Group in the United States Air Force. At that time, it was the Army Air Force. He was born in El Paso June 14th, so we just had a holiday, in 1919. He moved to L.A. when he was 5 years old. He flew a P-47 in World War II. He was the last ace in World War II. You know, you have to shoot 5 planes to be considered an ace. The aces are 1% of the Air Force, 1%. He shot 5 planes in one day on August 13, 1945. He was the last ace in World War II.
Interesting history.
Okay. Well, Mexicans had 5 aces in World War II.
Well, there's a lot about that. We're going to take a break here and come back and talk more about these things. But I just want to ask you a couple of things. The Special Forces Association, besides meeting and reminiscing about the various military campaigns, what do they do as an organization? And I understand there's some scholarships is one of the things you guys do.
Well, what we do specifically, each chapter, and there are 88 chapters, each chapter is an integral part of their own community. Each chapter will raise money through golf tournaments and several different fundraising.
Is golf tournaments events. A biggie for you?
It's our second largest fundraisers, our golf tournament. And once a year we will go through, ours is the Rainey Scholarship, and once a year we'll go out into the communities of El Paso and Las Cruces and solicit individuals that need some money for their education, and we'll get essays, and the essays will be judged, and those kids that write the best essays will be given money for college or even graduate school or even medical school.
How do they apply for that?
Well, we put the word out, we have a committee, obviously, that we have committees for everything.
And this guy here is Brian Kanoff. You may know his name from being a photographer in El Paso. You still get your byline occasionally.
Well,
the times.
Yeah, I still do photography in town, and I mean this is my 51st year as a photojournalist, and I don't get paid for the stuff that I do for the Times, but it still gets my name out there, which is a bit of recognition and publicity. So when Major League Baseball a month ago needed a photojournalist to photograph play ball at the at Southwest University's field, well, they found me,
of
and
course.
I did it for them. So getting your name out there is a good thing if you do what I do for a living.
And you normally are hanging out of some airplane.
Well, I do most of the construction progress aerial photography here in town. Both of the freeway systems that are being constructed right now, both the Paisano,
right.
it's called the Border West, and also the Go 10, which is the
These are your 10. Photos we're looking at.
Yeah, and whenever you see an aerial photo of either one of those, I usually shoot around on the 30th of the month, and it seems like it's been going on for, well,
ever. Right? And forever.
And there's it's open-ended.
As soon as they get through with one end of the freeway, these people are going to start at the other end and start over again. Well, you know they are.
It's the easiest kind of photography you can do. There's no change in exposure, and everything's at infinity.
Okay? And it's going to be in focus no matter what. You can't screw that. Can't mess it up. Brian Kanoff's in here. We're talking more about stuff at his convention in a minute. And the other guy you've been listening to is Bill Luna out of Chicago. And he's got an interesting take on Mexican-Americans. And you came to the right place here today, I have a feeling.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Kern, you ready for some trivia?
Some trivia, yeah. Okay, the Special Forces Association, besides meeting and reminiscing about the war, name a few other things they do as an organization.
We just mentioned those moments ago.
I know.
And then the other one?
The other one, what outdoor activity does Special Forces Association sponsor to help raise money for these educational scholarships?
We also just mentioned that.
I know that.
It's a four-letter word.
I know.
Don't tell anybody, but they can tell us if they call us.
That's right.
They have to call us using a telefono.
544-5876, 544-KTSM.
It's here. Tickets for our 2018 iHeartRadio Music Festival on sale now. Two nights on one stage.
T-Mobile Arena here in Las Vegas.
There's nothing else like it. Our 2018 iHeartRadio Music Festival. Hosted by Ryan Seacrest.
This festival is insane.
While the world is listening on iHeartRadio, you can be there. Get your tickets now at iHeartRadio.com/tickets. That's iHeartRadio.com/tickets.
What's the scariest thing about going to the dentist? Opening your mouth or opening your wallet? Because just a simple cleaning can cost $150, and things like root canals can cost you hundreds more. If you don't have dental insurance to help, you should give Physicians Mutual Insurance Company a call. 1-800-500-7616. This isn't a discount plan or preventive-only coverage. This is real dental insurance that helps pay for checkups right away, so you can call today and get your teeth cleaned tomorrow. Plus, it helps cover the more expensive procedures you might need down the road. Fillings, crowns, bridges, even costly dentures. There's no deductible and no annual maximum. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies, even if you're retired or on Medicare. Plus, you can choose any dentist you'd like. That's right, any dentist you want. Call and we'll rush you a free information kit with all the details. 1-800-500-7616. That's 1-800-500-7616. 1-800-500-7616.
Attention, Red Rock Travel is giving out 5 days in a luxurious resort in Orlando for four people with shuttle and tickets to a theme park for only $299. But you must tell me the name of a country without the letter A in its name. You know it? A country that does not have the letter A in its name. And you'll go with your family to Disney with tickets to a theme park. Call now, 1-888-900-2645. 1-888-900-2645. You'll get 5 days in the magical world of Orlando with free shuttle and tickets to a theme park only for the first 20 callers. Tell me a country without the letter A in its name. 1-888-900-2645. 1-888-900-2645. And now, if you're one of the first 20 callers, we'll add a second bonus destination to the beautiful Hilton Head Island in South Carolina for the same $299. Call now and tell me a country without the letter A in its name. 1-888-900-2645. 1-888-900-2645. Red Rock Travel, seller of travel license ST40839.
Folks, if you own land, you deserve a great deal on a great tractor, and that's why you should visit my good friends at Mahindra during Mahindra Dealer Days right now. Your local Mahindra dealer has huge savings on Mahindra subcompact, compact, and utility tractors, plus a full line of utility vehicles. And Mahindra's long-lasting powertrain warranties, they still come standard. Enjoy the land you love from the comfortable seat of a new Mahindra tractor and use the money you save to do something special. But hurry! You need to buy before these huge Mahindra Dealer Day savings are gone. To learn more about the world's number one selling tractor, it's easy. Visit MahindraUSA.com. That's MahindraUSA.com.
Take advantage of rock-bottom prices and test drive a Mahindra today at Goodman Ag in Las Cruces. Or visit GoodmanAg.com. That's GoodmanAg.com.
Now
Now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Okay, we got people on hold here for the trivia contest. There is a line open, 544-5876. If you wish to get involved, Rick will restate the questions in a second. I need to tell you who's coming here next week. Next week, New Mexico Museum of Space History's director, Chris Orwall, he's our guest to describe the museum, the history, and the stuff going on in that museum in Alamogordo. June 30th, what's the history of El Paso? To a journalist who grew up in Fabens. This guy's seen El Paso from a different perspective. Chris Babcock's coming in here. Oh, and we'll cool. talk about the El Paso Herald Post, because he's taking that over. July 7th, Isleta del Sur Pueblo renovated the tribal museum, and Mr. Rick Quesada will join us. July 14th, Abraham Lincoln in Mexico. That's going to be bizarre. July 21, Plaza Classic Film Festivals. What do you got?
The El Paso Archaeological Society's June speaker, Joan Price, presents her topic, Clay and Stone, Petroglyphs at Three Rivers Petroglyph Site, compared with Membrus Ceramic Painted Bowls at 2 p.m. on June 16th at the El Paso Museum of Archaeology, 4301 Transmountain Road, El Paso. And since the 1920s, participants in professional and volunteer archaeological field schools, independent scholars, and directors of research projects have noted that a significant number of petroglyphs at Three Rivers Petroglyph Site on the western slope of Sierra Blanca in the northern Tularosa Basin appear to be in the style of Membrus pottery. Designs created some of 100 to 200 miles to the southwest on trade routes. There is substantial evidence of trade in painted pottery pieces between Three Rivers and Membrus culture groups. Shards of each are found at the other's communities.
I'm choking up.
Are you okay, man?
I mean, I tell you what, move on to the trivia. Why don't you just do that?
That one really choked you up, didn't it?
It did.
All right, the trivia question, the second group of questions here, the Special Forces Association, besides meeting and reminiscing about the war, name a few other things that they do as an organization. That's the first question.
We got John on the radio. John's on now.
Yes. Would I be able to try the second part of the trivia?
Sure.
Okay.
Let me go ahead and read it again, okay?
Okay, go ahead. For the
listeners.
Right.
What outdoor activity does Special Forces Association sponsor to help raise money for these educational scholarships?
I would say golf.
You got it.
Thank you.
Okay. Would you like, we got a bunch of DVDs here.
Uh-huh.
And
Pepe's.
Or Pepe's.
Yes.
We got Pepe's also, $20
yes.
gift certificate for Mexican food there. Would,
uh-huh.
Would you like a DVD, man?
That's the one. I went out to Pepe's about a month ago. Delicious food. I'd like to do the get the Pepe's.
Great. Okay. It's coming your way.
Okay. Thank you.
If you'll stand by.
And Cindy will come on and tell you how to pick it up, all right? Thank you very much. Appreciate that. All right, we're going to take one more break and come back and talk more about all kinds of things in the military and this convention going on here. Should we do that?
Sounds great.
544-5876,
544-KTSM.
Shaquille O'Neal here. If you battle back or hip pain or knee or shoulder pain, you don't have to tough it out. You can just turn it off with Smart Relief from Icy Hot. You just push a button and whoosh. Smart Relief sends waves of relaxing pulses that safely block pain at the nerve level. It's simple, easy to use, and it's been clinically tested to start providing immediate relief for hours, even after you turn it off. So if you're battling pain, let Icy Hot help you win that battle. Turn on Smart Relief and turn off pain.
As a marketer, you want to reach everyone, adults, teens, millennials, but it's not like these groups all hang out in the same place, right? Actually, wrong. They're all right here, listening to radio commercials just like this one. Radio ads connect with 93% of Americans every week. That's more than Google, more than Facebook, more than TV. In fact, radio reaches 20% more millennials than TV. Want more of the people you want to talk to all in one place? You want to get to iHeartMedia.com and get AM/FM working for you.
Earnings vary based on your effort. Message and data rates may apply.
Do you want to learn how to make money flipping houses right here in El Paso? If so, we have an amazing opportunity for you. We're looking for a small group of motivated individuals to join our real estate investing team. You'll learn our simple three-step system for flipping homes right here in the local area. This is Than Merrill, star of A&E's hit TV show Flip This House. My team and I are looking for a handful of people in the El Paso area who want to learn how to make money flipping houses in your spare time using other people's money. El Paso is a perfect market for my system, and next week I'm holding a free two-hour educational workshop where you will learn how to make money flipping homes and how to build long-term wealth with income properties.
To get two free tickets to Than's workshop, text your five-digit zip code to 82,000. Seating is extremely limited, so text your five-digit zip code to 82,000. Text in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also reserve a free copy of Than's Money for Deals guide. Just text your zip code to 82,000.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Weather and traffic info. You need it? We have it. Traffic and weather all day. Stay informed. News Radio 690 KTSM.
Now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show. Brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
Let you know, this week only in El Paso Inc., here's what's coming.
How private negotiations to end the bitter legal battle over downtown arena project fell apart.
The principals of EPISD's first all-girls school talks about how its first year went.
The musical that tells the 400th year history of El Paso is back. What's new? Viva El Paso. El Paso?
El Paso is El Paso's locally owned business journal. El Paso Inc. is available for home and business delivery and online at elpasoinc.com. This week only in ABC 7, immigrant children separated from their parents held in borderland area detention facilities. Is the U.S. government simply following existing immigration law or going out of its way to punish undocumented immigrant families?
That's the topic of ABC 7 Extra Sunday night at 10:35. Join host Saul Sines for an in-depth discussion Sunday night at 10:35 only on ABC 7.
Hey, that's a good thing there. And El Paso Inc. coming along here with those stories and doing what they can. We're still talking about military history, and we have a convention in town. It's called Special Forces, isn't it, Brian?
Yes, well, this is the 2018 Special Forces International Conference and Convention.
And so you guys are here doing your thing, and one of your major themes is Mexican-American history within the military.
We're honoring the Mexican-American Green Beret.
All right. We've got to talk to Bill Luna in just a second here. We got a caller on the phone now on the radio named Jorge. Go ahead, Jorge.
Bill, I want to ask you another question. My aunt, she told me that she and my sister had a cousin. She and my mother had a cousin who lived in Chicago, and he was in the Pacific Theater at Iwo Jima, and his last name was Gonzalez, and his first name began with an I, and he was amongst those people who raised the flag on the hill on which he was raised. Do you have any knowledge of anything like that with respect to anybody by that name living in Chicago for that war?
Well, I'm really the only person that's collecting any military information in Chicago like that, and you know, it's difficult to capture all the information that's available in Chicago. I've heard about those things, but again, people have to call me. You know, I don't know all these things that are going on and people that have things at home and so forth. I had my museum open for 6 years, and I was hoping people would come. I was right on the main thoroughfare on 26th Street, which is the main artery for the Mexican community in Chicago.
But that name didn't come up in your thinking?
No. There's a lot of things that are out there that I just don't have privy to, you know.
Well, Jorge, do you have any follow-up on that? Do you have a name that you could actually give us?
The first name began with an I, and the last name was Gonzalez.
You know, well, Gonzalez.
Well, I bet you the U.S. Army knows exactly who put that flag up. We'll take a look at that.
Yeah, well, they said that, you know, when they put the flag up in Iwo Jima, actually it was the second flag that was put up there.
Yeah, it was more than one.
Yeah. And the first one, I know that there was a Mexican, I think, that was a part of that crew that did it. But, again, we were left out. Ira Hayes is the only one that really came out totally of the raising of that flag and his whole life story, how he tragically died and all that. But the first one was never even mentioned, and I heard. I have to have the proof. I have to have the name. I have to have all the background before I say anything. My credibility depends that I have the documentation in my hand before I say anything.
That's all we got, Jorge, but if you can find something else out, call me up.
I will. Thank you.
Thanks for your help over there. All right, we got more. You ready for some more calls?
Sure.
This one's from Jimmy. Jimmy, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Calling in from, I think, across the pond. I think it's Belgium, maybe, is what he told me. He's a high school alum of mine, class of 68, Isleta, military warrior that flew special ops, Cobras, et cetera, for the Marines.
This is that Jimmy?
This is that Jimmy. J.J. Elliott, welcome to our show today, buddy. How are you?
Hey, well, thanks so much. I appreciate that. I'm doing well. I hope everyone is doing well. You finally got some rain out that way, it appears.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a bunch of it last night. So
we've got a convention here of special forces, and they're focusing on the Mexican-American in military history. How can you help us with that?
Well, I don't know that I can help you out very much. You know, I came from our little small town in El Paso, Texas. And quite frankly, when I was going through, I was a Marine pilot at the time. And when I went through there, I did not see very many Hispanics that were going through the pipeline like I was. Not many at all. Typically, they were enlisted people, not going through flight school, but typically they were enlisted and very productive. Of course, you're in the Marine Corps. You've got that hoorah attitude, and everything you do is as best as you possibly can. But that was about it. You know, maintenance guys, flight line type people, fuels and that kind of stuff, but not a great deal of pilots at all.
Now, Jimmy, what is your full name?
Jimmy Jesse Elliott.
Okay. So you did, and your service was in what theater?
I was in Vietnam, and then I was in special operations. Later on, I was transferred out of the Marine Corps to go fly special ops for the Air Force. And of course, we were in Grenada. We were also in Panama, and then a whole bunch of other missions that we're not allowed to talk about for today.
Okay, but you don't come to these conventions because you live in Belgium, is that it?
No. I'm visiting. We have my company has some work over there,
okay.
And we're posturing for doing additional business out there.
But
so,
you're calling us today from Belgium.
Yes, I am.
I love technology.
He normally lives in the D.C. area.
I got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's 8:30 in the evening here, 8:35, something like that.
Well, I appreciate your time on a Saturday evening to call us up on a Saturday morning.
And I have nothing else to do except talk about war stories.
And I get to see you at our 50th reunion coming up, so that'll be fun.
Well, thanks.
Yes.
Thanks for ringing up, Jimmy.
Thanks so much. Anything else you need me?
We're good.
Any questions?
Thanks for ringing up. Appreciate
regarding
it.
Regarding special operations or
well, we can't
else?
We can't ask you any questions. You'd have to kill us, right?
my killing skills have kind of wavered, over the course of years. It's just fun to talk about.
It wouldn't
at
take
the
much,
bar, you know.
It wouldn't take much here, but yeah. All right. Thanks for ringing up. You take her easy.
Thanks, Jim.
Hey, you take her easy. Well, that was an interesting call out of Belgium.
We have to remember that when talking about special forces in terms of our context, it's Army, the only Army. Okay, so you have to limit it to that, all right? That's why it says special forces. Each group has their own special group.
So
the Marines have the recon. That's their special forces.
So do they have conventions as well?
I don't know. Okay. I'm saying this is our convention. It's only Army special forces. So you got to limit it to that.
Okay.
Can't be the whole broad brush,
The term special forces and Green Berets, it's interchangeable. There's only one special forces, and that's the U.S. Army special forces. And we are the Green Berets.
Okay.
Yeah. So that takes away from all the other. They have their own, like the Air Force has their own, the Navy SEALs, the Marines have a Force Recon, but we're Army Green Berets. That's it.
That was Brian Kanoff, who's organized basically the conference here in El Paso for the Special Forces. And the other guy is Bill Luna from Chicago, yeah. who is the guest speaker tonight. You have your big speech.
Right, right.
So are
right.
we hearing some of your speech now?
Kind of. I told Brian, but, you know, he's giving me 30 minutes. I usually speak for 5 hours. But I want to read something that about El Paso, okay, if I may. It's by a book by a person named Juan David Coronado. I just received it. And I have to thank my friend Omar Rivera. He's from Mission, Texas. Without him, I wouldn't have half of my exhibit. He sends me a lot of information about Texas, you know, in the military. He's a great, great person, Omar Rivera. This person named Juan David Coronado, he wrote a book called I'm Not Going to Die in This Damn Place. Manliness, Identity, and Survival of the Mexican-American Vietnam Prisoners of War. And includes, like, Isaac Camacho in here.
Yeah.
And Everett Alberts, of course. But I want to read something about another person from El Paso. It says, also in California, Rosario Munoz led this Chicano moratorium. And Chicano moratorium was started in California because the Mexicans were having the highest casualty rate in Vietnam. And an anti-war group that highlighted the concern the Chicano community had in relation to the Vietnam War. The escalating war in Vietnam became a great concern for the Chicano community, which incurred significant burdens in the war and consequently triggered a Chicano anti-war campaign throughout the Southwest. On August 3, 29, 1970, the Los Angeles Police Department and the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department responded with brutality when the Chicano moratorium led an anti-war rally. This incident, which is referred to as Requiem 29, resulted in the deaths of Native El Pasoan Ruben Salazar.
That was a biggie.
Who worked as a journalist for the Los Angeles Times and is reported for KMX. On August 29, 20,000 anti-war demonstrators were tracked to East Los Angeles afterwards. Salazar, who participated and covered the event, went into the Silver Dollar Cafe bar. I'm sure a lot of people know this, but I just want to read. To cool off shortly after Los Angeles Sheriff's deputies arrived, claiming they were responding to allegedly armed individual. Other accounts suggest that Salazar entered the bar when attendants shaking off a suspicious pair of men who had been following him. Without warning, the sheriff's deputy fired two tear gas projectiles into the bar, one which struck Salazar in the head, killing him. The Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department Deputy Tom Wilson fired a tear gas projectile that ended the life of Ruben Salazar. During the Vietnam era, the Chicano community faced concerns about civil rights, et cetera, et cetera. These concerns forced an outlet in the popular press and music. Salazar, an Army veteran himself, had served the Los Angeles Times as a war correspondent in Saigon and knew firsthand the rising casualties among Mexican-Americans. Well, to make a long story short, they felt that he was actually targeted. It wasn't an accident because of his concern about the casualties of Mexican-Americans.
He was in a bar, and a tear gas canister hit him in the head.
Right, right.
Inside a bar.
Well, he went into the cool off because he was out there, you know, and he went into the cool off and the projectile hit him in the head and killed him.
He had been a major journalist person here in El Paso.
Right.
And he had gotten himself arrested to be thrown in jail to report on the conditions.
Right.
And so he had a really weird career, and it ended tragically, like you just said.
Yeah. But he was doing a good thing, I would think, you know, to bring up the concern of the Mexicans had the highest casualty rate in Vietnam, you know, and that was a concern, you know, for the community. And just a sidebar a little bit, I teach Latinos in the law. Many people don't know that Mexicans were the first ones to desegregate schools in this country. I went to Kansas for the 50th celebration of the Brown decision, and I was on stage, and I said, public school segregation was never, ever, ever just black and white. As a matter of fact, the first successful case was Roberto Alvarez versus Lemon Grove in 1931. That was the first successful desegregation case in this country, and the Brown decision was based on a Mexican case, Mendez versus Winminster in 1947. Our story is never told.
Well, when your story is told, are you going to be happy about it? Is that going to work for you?
It's not a question of me being happy. It's a question of my youth need to know that we have participated, that we've always been here, that we always fought. We were the first cowboys. We were the first in civil rights. We were the first in mining. We were the first in everything because we were here. Everybody came across the ocean, but we were here.
So you want the history to be told like
I want told the way it really should be.
There you go. Vaqueros, definitely.
Vaqueros comes from the word, you know, buckaroo comes from the word vaquero. When you say by the music, do-si-do, it's do-si-dos. We taught them how to dance all that stuff, you know?
You know, and this is part of the problem in our education system these days is that history's not taught much anymore.
And this
kind of history particularly that we need to put emphasis on because people don't know about it. Yeah. You know, why not bring it into the schools, you know, like you said? And I think that's the only way you're going to hit the masses.
Well, that's
not
where
by
it starts.
People going out and buying books. No, we need to get this into the schools just like we used to have in the old days. We used to have all different kinds of specific of histories, Texas
right,
history,
right.
You know, El
well,
Paso.
Well,
you know?
Well, the thing about it, if you bring everybody in, somebody's have to give something up, and that's the problem.
That's the problem, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I know in Chicago I try to bring Hispanic history into the school system because I worked for the Board of Education. I used to write the evaluation reports for the board. And I tried to bring it, and I brought a legislator in. The only thing they teach in Chicago, well, it's changed now, but they taught black history, women history, the Holocaust. They teach nothing about Hispanic American history. And yet we're the dominant group now in Chicago. The student population is 40% Mexican now.
Wow.
You know, and so and we had a Mexican run for mayor, came in second after Rahm Emanuel, and he had no money. He had no money, and he came in second. It was the first time they had a runoff in Chicago in over 30 years.
Wait till next election, right?
Well, he's not running anymore. He's a congressman now.
We got a caller here. Let's put him on the radio. His name is Gary. Gary, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to find out. I was in the first lottery of the Vietnam War as far as 1969. And living in El Paso, I was – had a low number, but I was never asked to go take a physical. And I've always wondered if the Pentagon took quotas from certain areas, and because of El Paso with the high Hispanic population, were that many joining, and that's why they wouldn't take certain numbers, because I think it went to 212 that year. And I always want to thank the Mexican-American people from El Paso, because, you know, I waited for that letter every day.
But they were in line ahead of you.
Well, you know, it's funny because I never took a picture of my number was because the numbers went too. My number was like 120, 118, 120.
Yeah.
And I never got a physical. And I was always wondering if anybody knew if that's how they selected different areas of the country.
Okay, so you want us
people
to, you want us to tell you how the Pentagon works, huh?
Well, you know,
yeah, right. Good luck.
Excuse
well,
me.
You knew me with Kevin Well.
But, you know, the Valley has produced more. The Valley of Texas produced more people in the military, you know, than any other place in the country, really. You know, and this story is not told about the people in the Valley. Don't forget, Mexicans are the first in and the last out. The first person to get shot down in Vietnam was Everett Alvarez Jr., and the last person to leave Saigon on that helicopter was Juan Valdez, a Marine. Okay. So we're the first in and the last out in every conflict.
But his question about draft numbers, I don't think we can address that.
Well, that's too broad in scope. You know, we don't
know
what the
Selective
Service was doing.
You know, I never heard anybody talk that way.
Well, just one thing you have to know, we got very few deferments, okay, or we didn't run to Canada. That you need to know. That's the bottom line.
Oh, no, I agree with you. 100%, I support 100% of what they did. And, you know, I'm a big supporter of that. I just always felt kind of like, golly, you know, why am I not? Because I came from Albuquerque and guys with higher numbers were going, you know, were being drafted.
You could have volunteered, but you didn't.
No, it was something I was waiting for. And then, you know, then the next year came in and then the next numbers came through. So, you know, it's not that we all know it was a political war and it's never right.
Oh, yeah.
It was never right. It was a political war. My father was an Air Force pilot in World War II, and he's the one that said, Gary, just wait and see what happens. You know, he says it's a stupid war.
Yeah.
And it hurt, you know, killed a lot of people that should never have been killed.
Well, that's water gone, and I'm just so sorry.
Right.
Well, thank you for your call, and thank you for your contribution. All right, you take a break. We got Prince on the phone. I tell you what, Prince, put yourself on hold for a minute. We're going to take a break and come back and talk with Prince McKenzie because I think he probably has something to say. But if you have an interest to call us, that number would be 915-544-5876. Bill Toll, hit the button.
Go to ephistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history and for podcasts of our weekly radio show and for a list of area stores that carry our DVDs like El Paso's Waco Tanks, Mexican Revolution sites in El Paso, and Legends of El Paso's Mountains. 18 titles in all, plus links to dozens of TV stories about El Paso area history. Go to ephistory.com for a journey into El Paso's amazing history. ephistory.com.
Buffet the Italian way. Now at Cece's, for a limited time, try new Italian flatbread pizzas, Caesar salad, and lemon creme bars. Plus, get all your favorites on the buffet. When you crave more for less, Cece's. Restrictions apply.
Hey,
Hey there, it's Reese.
And Irvy.
From the franchise concept, Reese and Irvy's. By now you've heard about our patented frozen yogurt vending robots that serve 7 flavors of delicious frozen yogurt with 6 amazing toppings in less than 60 seconds.
To date, we've sold over 200 franchises, 1,000 robots, and we're officially labeled as one of the hottest franchise opportunities of 2018.
With no employees, no rent, no brick and mortar shops, just fully automated robots that work for you and deliver instant customer satisfaction. Revenue for you, smiles for them.
We secure our franchisees' high foot traffic locations like cinemas, hotels, tourist attractions, colleges, and malls. From installation to instant sensation, we provide you all the tools for Froyo success.
No experience is necessary, and full and part-time franchise opportunities are available.
To find out if your territory is still available, go to froyofranchising.com to learn more and be sure to enter promo code 1515. That's froyofranchising.com, promo code 1515.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org. Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Now let's turn back the pages of time and return to the El Paso History Show, brought to you by EPHistory.com for DVDs about El Paso history. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant at 6761 Donovan Drive. Sargent Home and Business Inventory Services, providing affordable photographic and digital inventories of your home, office, or collectibles. And by Monterey Asset Management for your real estate investments. And now, here again, El Paso History with Melissa Sargent and Jackson Polk.
These guys are having their own conversation in here. We need to put you guys on the radio. By the way, we need to get to real quick, Brian Kanoff. What was the special at Pepe's again today?
Green chili chicken enchiladas.
Aha, uh-huh. And I'll bet you something, the guy from Chicago who knows all about Pepe's, that's a chain of stores in Chicago. This is one of a kind. This is Mr. Pepe and Mr. Pepe's... basically, handler is his wife, okay. Lorena. She's in charge of everything.
But I'm just saying, the one Pepe's...
talking to here.
Oh. There were two brothers. I forget Pepe's founder's first name, but his last name was Dovalina, okay?
Oh, this is Morales. We got a call I need to talk to. You ready for this?
Oh, okay.
Find your headphones here, because here comes Prince McKenzie. Good morning, Prince.
Hey, great program.
Thank you. Good
to hear these guys talking. And I've worked with Brian Kanoff for many, many years and really value the quality of his photography. He's one of the great documentary photographers of our region.
Yeah.
But what he's done for the Special Forces is really good, and this recognition really is deserved. But I wanted to say one thing about the Special Forces. In my first tour in Vietnam, I was a leader of a team of analysts, and so we collected all kinds of information from satellites, from the ground, from all kinds of sensors, and every different kind of source that you can imagine, and I could not tell you about. But when we got information from Special Forces units, we knew that it was high quality and that it was really important. It was very valuable to us. And so we made recommendations for targets for B-52s, for targets where commanders could use for planning operations and defense of our forces in South Vietnam. We covered the 3rd Corps tactical region, the region around Saigon, north of the Delta. But anyway, the first point I wanted to make is that the information that we got from the Special Forces, we knew we had to place a value on every piece of information that
you
came in.
You respected them.
But
we knew
always high quality because we knew those guys were on the ground. Those guys were there. And thanks to their presence and the dangers that they went through, we really got high quality information, and we were able to integrate that into all the other stuff that we had to do for commanders.
Prince, as always, I want to thank you for calling us. You're always good for information. I know you were in Vietnam.
Two more comments.
Well, we got a lot. Make it 30 seconds. Go for it.
Okay. Sergeant Ted Martinez from San Antonio had already been in the Army for 20 years, and he was the best NCO that ever worked for me. I had Marine Corps sergeants, and I had a Navy chief, but Sergeant Ted Martinez was the greatest guy that really backed up my team and provided a lot of leadership. And the last thing I wanted to say was every Sunday night on the Armed Forces Radio, they played Mexican music, and that made me feel like I was back home again.
You heard El Paso on the radio, huh?
That's right.
All right. Okay. Prince, thanks for calling. Appreciate it. You take it easy. Prince is, yes, sir.
Mr. I just wanted to make one comment. The primary mission of Special Forces is to gather intelligence. That's why there are 12-man teams, and they drop them behind the lines and integrate in the community to gather intelligence. Because without proper first-hand intelligence, they're not going to be the operation ordered everything to plan for, you know, any kind of operation. So that's the basic mission of Special Forces, to gather intelligence.
All right. Now, if you needed help to get your museum back together, is there a way for people to contact you?
Yes. You can contact me at my phone number, basically, 773-551-4750. And I have an email. I don't have a website, but my email is wluna2122@gmail.com.
Let's put a museum to the Mexican Americans in military service in Chicago.
Yes,
and there's a cultural museum coming here for the Hispanics, supposedly. Right. Maybe we can get you to put something in here.
Well, I could. Or either I can be a consultant or just advisor, whatever, you know, because I've been doing this 30 years, you know, and I'm the only Mexican historian in Chicago, you know, and it's a large city. And
we're sending Dave Gutierrez up to talk to you.
Dave and I are going to hook up.
Yeah, we're going to get him signed.
He wants to, and I want to thank Jackson for putting me in touch with David. And the closer to it, we had a close friend of mine that I brought to Corpus Christi. His son was at Hamburger Hill, and his name is Tom Almendarez. He passed away here in Corpus Christi, but he was in Company E, the one that David wrote about. In 36th Infantry Division out of Texas.
There will be a movie, they tell us.
Right.
Bill Luna, thank you very much for coming in here. And Brian Kanoff, thank you kindly. Appreciate you bringing this to us today. Mr. Rick Kern, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jackson.
And Cindy Milazzo doing the calls. Mr. Bill Toll on the electrons. Everything you need to know about this radio show is at ephistory.com. See you all next week. Thank you all for being here. Take her easy.
Thank you for listening to the El Paso History Show. We hope you'll join us again next Saturday morning, 10 to noon, and be sure to tell a friend about us. Brought to you by ephistory.com, the website for archive podcasts of this radio show, and DVDs about El Paso history and heritage. ephistory.com. Pepe's New Mexican Restaurant and Cantina, making the old Griggs recipes in a new location, 6761 Donovan.